Welcome back, everybody, to episode 2 of the Purple Chop Podcast.
You messed that up.
Well, I was going to say the new name for
it. You can't just call it the Purple Chop Podcast and then go, oh, by the way, now it has a new title.
Well, that's what we called the first one, so we have to establish that that's what it was called. And then we have to establish the new name, which is The Talk Shop? Is that...
The first weekly iteration.
Also, shop is spelled the fancy way with an extra P and E.
Oh, of course, yeah.
You know, we're keeping it classy here. So
continuity is a big deal to us.
Absolutely.
There's going to be an overlying plot if for all of you who really pay attention.
We've slipped in one word per 8 sentences, and you have to figure out what the story is there.
We're all going to have really rich character arc. We're all going to learn something about ourselves and each other.
Absolutely.
Friends will become enemies. Enemies will become friends.
Actually, I wanted to start with a correction. Last week, I said my second favorite game was Metroid Fusion. That was inaccurate. The game I was referring to was Metroid Zero Mission. Was Metroid Zero Mission.
Stop! Right.
So, I know everyone who hasn't heard the podcast, because I haven't put it up yet, is real butthurt about
that. Oh, yeah.
Well, that,
so,
that
pretty
just...
much just me, because I edited it.
You know when you've been playing a long game and then you find out you haven't been using the rules right?
Yep.
Yeah.
That just unfolds everything, because I said that I'd played your second favorite game.
Right, yeah.
Because I've played Metroid Fusion,
mm-hmm.
but I've never played Metroid Zero.
So you were listening to him talk about Fusion and you were like, was it that good?
Well, I'll show you what a sheep I am. I just, oh yeah, yeah, that was a remake of the original. In my head, I was like, I thought that like she had a different suit and it was like a whole thing.
Oh yeah, I played like, Fusion too. Know. Fusion's really
I
good.
Watched a really interesting video. It was... some study that a university did where they had like 8 participants. Only one of them was not a plant, but they obviously didn't know that they were the only not plant.
Well, right.
And so they're all sitting in a classroom and the guy comes up front and he's got these big like poster card, these big poster board posters with a bunch of vertical lines on them. And the question is, and they're numbered like 1 through 5. And the question is, which one is the tallest? And it starts out like, one of them is clearly taller than the other one. Everybody's like 3, next person 3, next person 3, whatever.
Yeah.
And then at one point, there's one that is like debatable, and then it gets more and more the other way. But the more and more they go the other way, once they hit the middle point, everybody except the plant unanimously agrees that the clearly objectively wrong one is the taller one.
Yeah.
And to try and see how long it takes for the person to just be like, sure, whatever, to just like go along with it.
Did they end up doing that?
Every single person did.
Oh my god.
It was
god.
Like 15 people.
I guess I can see that. Well, maybe.
In my head, I'm always like, well, I wouldn't.
But you totally would.
Everybody
I totally
would.
Like, if that's the only thing standing between you and a free pizza, you're just going to...
Maybe I should just agree.
They grabbed me from the mall. I really need to get back to Macy's, but I smelled the free pizza.
It's not like they're going to publish this anywhere.
Yeah. It's not like everyone else is a plant and the joke's going to be on me at the end of this.
It's not like everybody's going to watch this on YouTube. Millions of people.
Some of those studies get really scary. Like the ones where they get everybody to confess to crimes they never did.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yep.
It's scary, man.
There's obviously, we all know what the placebo effect is. There's an the placebo effect being, I guess, the strict definition. It's not just any sort of effect that you get tricked into, like, subconsciously applying to yourself. It's strictly positive effects.
Yeah.
So the opposite is the nocebo effect, where a doctor...
Is that actually what it's called?
Yeah. Instead of a doctor giving you a sugar pill and saying, this is going to cure your headache, they'll give you a sugar pill and say, this is going to give you a headache. And it's about the same success rate, but there's almost no studies, because none of them get approved by ethics boards.
Well, I wonder why.
Well, there's all kinds of things like that. Like when you're, if you study any of that stuff,
mm-hmm.
there's like marked evidence that if you're studying, say, throat cancer and it starts talking about you have a swelling in your throat or you have a pain in the very back of your throat, like 8 out of 10 people that read that will suddenly have that pain.
Yeah.
And that's why it's dangerous to list side effects for drugs, because side effects work that when they do their study, the FDA had to approve a drug. Anything that's reported from their control group
really
has to be added as a side effect.
Okay.
And I don't know the whole process. I imagine they repeat it a few times and look for some common things. But I think they're morally obliged that anything that comes up that might be a side effect has to be listed.
So do you think a drug company – so say you're a drug company. Mm-hmm. You made this drug.
I'm a drug company.
It's looking like it's going to be pretty good.
I'm a truck.
You have you have the next boner pill. The new hot one, right?
the boner pill, that's all the rage.
Yeah.
This is the one.
Raging.
Do you think
boner.
It would be, do you think economically, if you have a drug, if you're having a drug trial and people are reporting lots of side effects, do you think there's a point where you just cut the whole thing and start it over again?
I bet it happens way more often.
And just hope that, and just hope that by luck of the draw, you get one where people don't report as many.
I know for a fact that that's a strategy, because they'll change just one small part of the chemical composition, mm-hmm. and they'll re-release it. That's why synthetics are so hard to make illegal, because they keep illegalizing certain chemistry.
Like the name of the and it's my understanding is the way laws are written, it's almost impossible to enforce something that isn't like a specific name of a chemical or compound.
So they just keep changing one small part of it and re-releasing it, and then they have to make that one illegal. And, you know, they'll release like 50 at a time.
Mm-hmm. It's like, remember a couple of years ago, France banned free shipping on books because it's apparently a big cultural thing, bookstores, and they weren't doing too well, mostly because of Amazon and other online retailers. So all of the online retailers started offering 1 cent shipping. They banned 1 cent shipping, 2 cent shipping, and this went into like 6 cent shipping, and they stopped.
That's funny.
Pretty good.
All right, should we dive right into it?
Yeah.
All right, let's go.
So continuing our theme from last episode, we're picking our top three favorite X category. And last week we did gaming, and this week we're doing movies. So I hope everyone's prepared.
I do have three movies.
So do I.
One of you better not have stolen one of mine.
I think I've got a pretty solid list. I'd be really surprised if one of you took it.
Two of my movies are like world-renowned classics, so it wouldn't completely surprise me.
All right. Well,
but we'll see.
One of mine is a classic, I would say. But the other two are like, eh. So I'll qualify again. The movies I'm going to pick are probably not cinematic classics in the strictest sense. They're just movies I enjoy personally. So they're not like, they're not going to be any like, you know, P.T. Anderson movie, like There Will Be Blood or anything like that, like super art house stuff. It's just going to be movies that I enjoyed and I have fond memories of.
Two of mine won Oscars.
Oh, look at Mr. Big Shot.
Look at this guy.
That wasn't like a qualifier.
God, I have awards.
I think at least one of mine has. Definitely one of them. I'm pretty sure. I think.
But my number one pick is probably not what most people would assume would be a number one pick, but we'll see.
Barney and the Magic Egg.
That is a good one.
The
symbolism they use in the contrast of the darks and the shadows to illustrate the turmoil in Barney's soul.
Yeah, I agree. That's an underrated film. Same with the live
cheating.
Action.
You were an English major.
Can I tell you that children's movies could traumatize you? Did any of you have any of you heard of the Christian children entertainer, the Donut Man?
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh,
of course. Of course, I've heard
life
of the
without Jesus is like a donut.
Yep.
There was an episode of that where they're having their meeting, and about halfway through, a little girl knocks on the door, and she's like the sweetest little girl. Mm-hmm. And they open it up, and she's like, "I'm sorry, I'm late. I was helping my grandma." Like straight up stone cold, they go, "Sorry, you know the rules. If you're late, you don't come in." And they close the door on her, and the girl's like crying.
What?
That messed me up as a
What's
kid.
What's the moral of that story?
Because actually, pretty deep for a kid's show. It's about like the letter of the law versus the intent of the law. I don't think they ever phrase it that intelligently, but basically they sing a song about how sometimes rules need to be broken for the right reasons, and then they go and they let her in.
But the demographic of kids that show's aimed towards isn't going to pick up on that.
Probably not.
They're not even going to finish it. They're just going to see what you saw and go like, and be just be
like,
lives ruined.
Donut Man, why? I mean, she's like 5 minutes late. Who cares?
He like makes a face and points at his watch too. He's like, you know the rules. The
kids, you're going to hell now. The kids watching that show probably even think the Donut Man's real. You can't expect them to pick up.
Even
on
the
that,
talking donut,
the
they're like, yeah, oh yeah, talking donut.
Looking
absolutely.
Back, I remember them closing the door on the crying little girl way more than I remember them letting her back in.
Yeah.
Well, that's the gotcha moment.
All right, movies.
They know all right.
So to this day, I'm always on time for donuts.
Everything else, nah.
All right, who wants to kick it off?
And donuts are the movies of the food world.
I'll kick it off.
To bring
nice
it back
segue.
To topic.
That's a good segue.
You like that?
I'll kick it good. Off. Right. I did mine. My list is basically movies that I could just watch over and over and over and over and over and over and over again.
Sure.
At least one of them is like a huge blockbuster, made tons of money, awards, whatever.
All right.
I'm going to start off with Dread.
Oh, that's a good
choice. That's such a good movie.
That wasn't on my list.
When I first saw it, I think we watched that together, didn't we? The first time you showed it to me. Mm-hmm. And then I think I watched it like four more times that year. Like I've seen that movie like eight times. I can just keep watching that movie. That's it's a phenomenal movie.
Like that completely caught me off guard because obviously there's the first Judge Dredd with Stallone and he's like, and it's like just garbage and he's not wearing his helmet for 90% of the movie.
Whoa.
I'm comparing
We're
to the new
Dredd.
We're not
going to call the 90s Stallone garbage.
No, okay. Maybe I overstepped my
bounds. I mean, Schwarzenegger was better.
Compared to Dredd, though, that movie is hot garbage.
They're completely... Dredd is a legitimate movie.
Sam's
as
offended.
Far as Judge Dredd movies,
look
though,
at him. His arms are crossed. He's
no, I'm scratching myself.
Yeah,
I'm
keep telling yourself that. In an
aggressive position.
Don't you ever diss my 90s movies. It was a different era.
Only 90s kids will remember this.
Movies had different objectives. I'm sorry that we used to just want to have a good time.
All right. All that aside, Dredd is a fantastic movie.
That's a really good movie.
No, it's... Whenever I hear movies like that, you imagine like a top 10 list if we went for that. Mm-hmm. I always think, oh, yeah, that would have made it on. And I think Dredd would.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We could talk about Dredd for hours.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I have a really short attention span. I can't watch many things more than once. Mm-hmm. And even especially something that you know everything that's going to happen in advance. Mm-hmm. That's just, why would you waste your time? But there's something about that movie, man.
The
one-liners, dude. It's like crack.
The one, like, hot shot.
Yep, that's what I was just thinking of. I was totally lined up to say that.
The first time I saw that, I was like, damn!
They did that right in like the first 5 minutes, too. Because as soon as you see that guy's head melting, you're like, oh boy.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those movies.
And then there's the homeless guy chilling in the automatic door.
ISO cubes.
Yeah.
Juve cubes.
Here's the deal. And John Wick and Dredd are very much from the same wheelhouse. And what they did right was they had amazing...
Where's the pen? We gotta stab him.
There's one.
We never
figured out the punishment. That was what you guys were supposed to do.
All right. Well, unless we keep that bit of context in from before, for those listening, we had a game set up before we started recording where whenever Sam would say amazing, we'd have to...
It was his idea, by the way. I don't care what he says.
Something about having a microphone in my face makes you want to say amazing. I never say it anywhere else in my life.
These microphone's amazing.
You called yourself... I wouldn't have known. I wouldn't have noticed.
Yeah, I didn't.
I would have just gone on.
Right over my head.
I'm trying to make it fun, and so I think that for the audience,
did you do that?
Once I call myself out on my stupid things that I do, and I just did it. I don't know what it is about talking about things I like in front of a microphone, but I want to describe everything as amazing.
Amazing.
So you guys get to pick a punishment. Keep a tally. That's one.
All right.
But they had really great expanded universes.
Yep.
But they didn't line it all up for you like a typical Hollywood movie did. They respected your intelligence. And kind of just let you pick up on the subtle things yourself.
I was just going to say, just the use of the word ISO cube.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to see a scene of the guy, like this long one shot, like 4 minute scene of a guy getting thrown into the back of a truck, getting processed, going to the, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You just say ISO cube.
And you immediately know what it is.
And you know what it is.
Yeah.
Like, what is a juve cube though?
It's ISO what's cube the difference? For younger, for
yeah,
juveniles.
But what's actually the difference? Is it like a teddy bear in one?
I'm sure it's the same. Maybe they get more food. Who knows?
The people that monitor them comments. Have special licenses to prove that they're not pedophiles. That's right. The difference.
That movie. So good, though.
I love that movie.
And 27, the shootout with the judges, the other judges. That's a good one, too. Oh, God. Now I want to watch Dredd.
Yeah.
Like,
it's
I
really
just,
good. Is this
as soon
on
as
Netflix?
We talk about it. I'm sure
no,
it is.
I don't think so.
Really?
That's a bummer if it isn't.
Do you have Netflix on your phone?
I just deleted it. Like last night, literally. So
oh,
I'm
dang.
Searching.
All right. Well.
Get back to us on that. I think we can move on to Tom.
All right. My third favorite movie, and this seem like a strange placement given the context of the other movies I'm going to pick tonight, but it's Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Good choice. Great movie.
That movie, I never tire of watching that movie. It's always entertaining. It's just enjoyable start to finish, like everything about that. I love the setting, like the pre-World War II, where it's just like everything's ramping up. And, you know, it's a freaking... cinematic classic.
You know, that's the only Indiana Jones movie I've seen.
You're better off that way. Actually,
the Last
third
Crusade
one's good.
Is good.
That's a legit good one.
Yeah.
Too.
Yep.
You second should watch at least that one. Sean Connery and Indiana Jones.
Is there anyone who liked the Shia LaBeouf one? Or was that universe?
It had
just
moments.
Bad.
That's pretty much all I have to say about it.
Do you remember when I had the idea to write the article where I defend something that's kind of universally hated?
Yeah. Okay.
Like the Reliant K
album? Yep,
I wanted to actually do one on that Indiana Jones. Because it's not good, but it's not bad in the context of like Temple of Doom. Like Indiana Jones was consistently really corny and weird and bizarre.
Yeah, Temple of Doom, I watched that again recently because I got the whatever Blu-ray set or whatever. And I forgot, like, I didn't realize how bad that movie is until just recently. Like, I watched, the last time I watched it, I was a kid. And then I watch it now, and it's just like, this is garbage. Like,
really
his sidekick's really annoying. The freaking, what's her name? Bobby? Is that the chick's name?
I can't remember her name. I just remember she's terrible.
She is terrible. It's awful. And it's a prequel for some reason. Like, why?
Yeah, she's very whiny. She's like the reason why feminism exists.
To prevent that.
Her entire job is to be like, I don't want to do that. I want to look pretty. That's literally what she, they're in the middle of this jungle crazy cannibal cult.
Yeah.
And she's worried about her hair.
Yeah. So Raiders is basically all the best parts of Indiana Jones.
Raiders of the Lost Ark is an incredible movie from beginning to end.
Yeah.
when they go to the book burn. No, I'm thinking Last Crusade with Hitler and the book burning.
Oh, yeah, that is Last Crusade, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because there's a Nazi chick and she's all sad about it.
Usually if I watch one, I watch it. Like, if I'm going to watch Last Crusade, I'm going to watch the one that you're talking about.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
All right, you're number three.
Yep, my number three is Forrest Gump.
Ooh. That is a really good movie.
That is a good
movie. I've seen it twice. I was going to say I've only seen it once. I've seen
long.
It. Yeah.
It's pretty long.
That's probably the movie I've seen the most times in my life.
Really?
Yeah.
It's always on cable, like perpetually.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, because especially when we were younger, when cable was a thing that we had, and flipping channels was a thing. Mm-hmm. Over Christmas, I was at my mom's house. She just sits and flips channels, and I can't do that, man.
That's a thing of the past. That's dying
out. It doesn't
exist
anymore.
Channel surfing.
Why would I waste my time deciding what I want to watch after I've already seen it? Why wouldn't I?
Yeah.
Anyways, so did you sit out individually each time you wanted to watch Forrest Gump and all of the however many times you've apparently seen it? Or was it always just a passive thing?
No, I actually enjoy watching it. That's like it's a sick day or whatever. I just need a movie to chill to. I'll watch Forrest Gump.
Interesting.
There's a lot there. Like, yeah. It's a pretty dense movie.
This just made me think of another movie I really like.
Go for it.
Is it going to beat your three?
I don't know. No, I don't think it can, but it's close.
Okay, go for it.
Jarhead is my other movie that I really like to watch.
I've never seen
in that
Jarhead.
Situation.
Never seen it either.
When people ask me to describe my experience in the military, I tell them that the best way for them to know is to watch Jarhead. Because almost day for day, that movie matches exactly what my entire 4 years was like.
Okay.
At least captures, if nothing else, it captures the spirit perfectly. Okay. Of what it felt like being in and going through all this stuff.
Is Jarhead about the Marines, though?
Yeah, but I mean, it's...
Ooh, crossing over.
If you just change the name. There's nothing in that that's so specific to the Marines, except that they need to shout out that they're Marines every 5 seconds. Which, to be fair, I was a paratrooper, and we needed to shout out that we were airborne every 3 seconds to make sure that we felt superior to the
legs.
Is that really
Army
why
engineer-
they do it? Is it just they're ingraining an attitude in your head?
It's all about making you feel bigger and better than you are. That's just what it is.
Okay.
They want you to feel invincible so that when they give you the order to go run at a pillbox.
You're going to think you won't die.
You're going to think that you're going to be all right. And the Marines especially do this.
Fair enough.
They are the guys that get told to run into walls of bullets.
Yeah.
And what's so funny is that it works so well that they know that. If you talk to any general Marine, they're like, yeah, we're sent to run at bullets. And it's worked so well that they're, like, proud of that fact.
And you're okay with this?
We're designed to die. That's what we do. Hoorah. And it's like, all right.
Well, at least you know. Like, it's not going to be a surprise when
it
happens.
That's funny.
It's the best way to trick people to go and do suicide missions is to make them feel like only they could do it because they're so badass. It's brilliant. And airborne's a lot of the same way because, I mean, you're jumping out of planes. Which always has a percent with the cheap parachutes that the Army uses, always had a certain percentage of just killing you. And that's just...
Are they really that cheap?
They're pretty cheap. And they've been used hundreds of times. Oof, and they're being packed by a rigger.
I was just going to ask if you pack your own.
No. A rigger does it. And riggers have, like, in the military, the biggest suicide rate, the biggest drug use rate, and the biggest... Like, their morale
is it because of the guilt of packing parachutes that kill people?
No. No, it's because their job is terrible. They show up every morning at 7. We used to have to go and... When you're in airborne school, you have to go and help them out. So you get to see their life. And you have to do, like, 25 chutes. And to describe packing a chute, imagine... You know when you have a bunch of cords in your pocket and they come out in, like, a devil knot?
Yeah.
Imagine that to a huge extreme. And your job every day is 25 times to go through and untangle these terrible knots... and then test, do all these little checks on the integrity of the chute, and then repack it in a very specific way.
How does one become a rigger?
It's an MOS. It's a job you sign up for.
Okay. Oof.
I don't know how recruiters
are they
sell
in
it.
The airborne or are they?
How would you here's like the to really cool thing about riggers, and this is like the only thing that keeps these guys at all sharp to keep their job, and you know it's not like you can get fired. So just to exist, once a month, one of their shoots, because they keep a log of which shoots were packed by who. Every month, one of their shoots is chosen randomly, and they have to jump with it.
Ooh,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
No slacking there.
So you have to be airborne to be a rigger. And then
is that just the way of keeping their skin in the game?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, okay.
Because the army knows its people.
Yeah.
And they know that especially with a monotonous, repetitive task like that, eventually somebody's going to stop caring.
Mm-hmm. So that's interesting to me because that's like a terror thing for them. Like, you know, there's in the back of your mind, you're always aware that you could jump with a chute. So if you pack it badly, like... that could be it.
Yeah.
But then there's like, is it the Navy on ships incentive flights or is that just the Air Force?
Well, there are also people who don't care at all if they live or die. And we just play Russian roulette if they had a gun to do it with.
Yeah.
And maybe they're just packing parachutes instead.
I don't think they would make it to rigger though, would they? Or like if there was somebody.
It's not like a highly esteemed MOS. It's not like, oh man, that guy's a rigger.
Well, no, yeah, okay. No. I mean, like, there's got to be some kind of evaluation. I mean,
maybe
that.
You become a rigger and then you get crippling depression.
That's way more likely. Imagine a job 5 to 7 days a week.
I mean, it's really depressing. There are a lot of people who just genuinely wake up every day. They don't want to die, but they don't care if they live.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just doesn't matter at all. And if that person's packing your parachute,
yeah,
it doesn't matter at all to them if there's a 1 in, I don't know, 12 chance that next month they're going to have to jump with one of their chutes.
Yeah.
I was more going back to, like, the different branches motivate differently, it seems like. Because an incentive flight is, like, a purely positive thing. They're not just like, we're going to push you out of this plane.
I mean, if you die, you die. That's, you know, it's on you.
Okay. Well, you know, here's one thing you have to understand, because jumping out of plane sounds really fun, and it is. But you're thinking civilian style. You're thinking like, oh, I wake up at, you know, 11, and I kind of go out there, and it's a warm day, and I jump, and I have a good time, and then I go home. You have to understand that you get up at about 3 in the morning, and you go and you dry your weapon. Then you find out if you're going to be carrying the heavy weapons or the combo equipment, which is going to add like another 100 pounds to you.
Fun.
Both?
Nobody carries both.
No. I mean, are they both equally heavy or close enough to being the same weight?
Is your question if they evenly distribute things so that
everyone... No, you said the heavy weapons or the comms equipment.
Yeah.
Are they equal weight?
No. Do they weigh the same? Is getting one worse than getting the other one?
They're both pretty bad. I think heavy weapons were worse.
Okay.
Because you have to carry the tripod and the weapon and stuff like that sometimes. Then you go and you get in a big line.
How big? How many people?
Probably about 100 people.
Okay, that's a big line.
Yeah.
And then you wait.
Ooh.
And then they all come through and they inspect you. And then you get in another big line to get on the plane. Then you get on the plane, then you jump, which is the fun part. And then keep in mind that it's not like Hollywood parachutes where you can steer. I mean, you can kind of steer, but where you land really soft, you know, like people land on their legs and then start running. You hit the ground like a bag of rocks.
Yeah.
It's very unpleasant.
Okay.
And then you have to pull security and guard or do a battle drill that's going to last until midnight. Sometimes you're just laying in the prone until midnight, which is like another 6 hours.
Oof.
And then you get to pack up and go home. But I mean, doing that about once a month, you get really sick of it.
What's the process? You've flown commercially before?
Yes.
What's the process? How does it compare waiting in line for an Air Force, for a military flight versus a civilian flight?
I mean, it's always going to be worse.
Which one takes longer?
That really does depend. I've gotten on a civilian flight really quick. I've never gotten on a Army flight quick.
Okay. Okay.
There is no shorter line for service members. You're getting yelled at all the time. But you have good friends there. But I mean, you're not supposed to bring cell phones, but everybody does. And stuff like that.
Yeah.
All right, we should probably bring it back.
Yeah, probably. Oh, I got to pick another movie.
Yeah, how did we even get onto that?
Was there anything else you want to say?
Oh, Jarhead.
About? Yeah, okay.
Forrest Gump, really good classic. A lot of really feel-good moments. You can't finish that movie without feeling a little bit better about humanity. And it takes you there by earning it. It shows you really dark places, and then it ends.
Yeah.
On a really bittersweet note.
Mm-hmm.
It'll break your heart and make you laugh. It's a great movie.
Good. My number two, I picked The Prestige.
Really?
I like that movie a lot. It's not really the dread type watch it a zillion times kind of movie.
Sure. Well, I mean, there's like one twist.
Yeah, yeah. I really like the twist. I think it's really cool. The whole, I mean, you both have seen it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The whole the whole clone thing.
Yeah.
I like how they didn't, whoever directed it, I don't know who directed the movie.
That was Christopher Nolan.
Oh, it was a Nolan movie. Okay. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, I like that whoever directed it didn't do like a whole, any other director would have shown a million scenes like starting at a third of the way through the movie of all the clones dying. You know, like,
yeah.
Like they would have just done a way worse job. Or some exposition at the very end about explaining the twist or something. Not that it was like super out there or insane, but like there were probably still people who left the theater and didn't quite understand what happened.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was a movie with a twist, but it didn't phone it in. Like this, it's so easy to ruin a good twist just with however you handle the revealing of it or the explanation of it, if there even is one. There's a lot of foreshadowing in that movie. Watching the movie, it's obvious that there's foreshadowing going on. You just don't know what it means yet.
Yeah, right.
So, like, Nolan isn't, like, he's pretty heavy-handed with the, hey, look, this is going to mean something later, guys. You better be paying attention.
They hide the twin brothers in sight the whole movie.
Yeah.
Once you know that they're twins, yep. They don't even try.
That's really good. Yeah. That's really cool.
But
that's
I clever. Actually liked that even better than the teleportation.
Yeah.
I liked that twist even
it's
more.
It's a better trick.
Yeah.
It's just a better trick, I think. It's like, I don't know, you see Penn and Teller, they do the cups and balls, and then they do it with clear plastic cups at the end. And it's just as good of a trick, but just because of how impressive it is, like the coordination. The bird in the cage, when he crushes the cage, and the bird actually does die the whole time. There's just another bird. And they show you the trick. Mm-hmm. And it's still like, I didn't realize it until the end of the movie. It got me.
Here's the thing, that movie came out for me at an age where I was just starting to think critically about movies.
Mm-hmm.
So if I don't know how it would have been if I went into it looking for the twist, because M. Night Shyamalan in our generation kind of brought the twist back.
Yeah.
He made us aware that twists could happen in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that I went into The Prestige looking for a twist. As I recall, the first time I saw Prestige, it was on a laptop and I was just kind of watching it. And that's why it worked, to blow your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it was definitely a movie that I had watched and then I had to rewind a little bit and watch it again to kind of, what did I just see?
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty haunting knowing that he was drowning himself.
Yeah.
Every time.
I liked the thing where he was the real one, right? He had all the clones, but he was the real one.
Mm-hmm.
But he never, like the Prestige, the name of the movie being the end of the trick when everything's revealed and it pays off and everybody's applauding and you're sitting there, you know, arms up, end of the show, everybody's losing their minds. How all of those moments for him were always underneath the stage by himself while the clone was up top taking all the credit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was a... I like that part.
Chris Nolan, he's got some clever movies, I tell you what.
Yeah, I'm excited for Dunkirk.
Yeah.
That's really his good. War movie coming
They're
out.
Marketing that movie really well.
Yeah.
He's usually pretty good. Like, he doesn't do the, you know, a lot of, you know, obviously blockbusters spoil the entire movie in the trailer.
Yep.
His trailers are usually pretty good about
that
kind of stuff.
Let's not forget that he created the wah.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Yep. Yeah. And he created a reasonable historical excuse to have the wah. Yeah. I didn't know about the history of the sound that Stuka's made until I looked it up.
Yeah.
Isn't that terrifying?
The Germans are messed up, man.
Oh, yeah.
For our audience, you should, start from the beginning and actually explain it.
Well, they took... I don't know if there's a full story to it. I just know they took ambulance sirens and put them on planes because they noticed how terrifying they sounded.
Like, as if a plane shooting machine guns wasn't frightening enough. They had to, like, add something else so you knew it was coming, but there's nothing you could do about it.
Psychological warfare is real. Psychological warfare is real.
Well, that's like the... what were their...
Silawawawalawa is real.
What were their rocket trucks called?
Rocket trucks.
Oh, the Russian ones?
Yeah. Or the ones that made the
noise?
Dude.
I forgot what those things are called.
Don't mess around with it. That's terrifying.
Yeah.
I wish I remember what they were called, but the sound they made were just like these just howling sirens. And I don't mean siren like ambulance siren. I mean siren like screeching, horrible.
Yeah. Like specters of the damned.
Like you hear it 2 minutes before it hits you.
Yeah.
And you know you're gonna die. Well, or at the very least, you hear the sound. Fight. You hear the sound, and you know someone somewhere is dying.
I'm loving this top three list because basically we say a movie, and then we talk about something completely different for 10
minutes. Isn't it great?
This is great.
I don't even like. It started with magic tricks, and then it went to Chris Nolan, then it went to
Dunkirk.
Dunkirk.
Yeah.
And then I've got psychological warfare.
I've got nothing else to say about The Prestige. It's just, I like it a lot.
Well,
it's a good movie.
All right. Okay, so I guess the next movie is, I kind of fibbed a little bit. It is a little art housey, I guess, sort of.
Come on.
Grand Budapest Hotel is my number two.
Grand Budapest is really good.
That's one of my
You know what's interesting is Bigfoot.
Hey, isn't he amazing?
Is he a monkey? Is he human? Do we know?
Let's open it up. We're opening up the lines. Give us a call. Bigfoot's the topic.
Yep.
Throw something in about the Great Budapest.
If anyone's seen a Wes Anderson movie, you kind of know what to expect.
Yep.
Like, obsessively neat shots. Really insanely dry humor that just, like, falls. And then if you don't laugh, then it's just plot.
Sucks to be
like,
you.
Like, but it has, like, heartfelt moments. All the acting is superb. And it's just a nice movie. And I like the fact that it takes place in a girl reading a book, but it's also the author retelling the story as it happens. So it's like kind of an Inception type thing going on, if you think about it.
I saw it once. I enjoyed it. Nothing stuck out to me too much. Maybe I need to give it another try.
Yeah, I really like I just love how he shoots everything. Everything's just like.
Oh, yeah, he's a great director.
I haven't seen it, but I've heard really great things from a bunch of people.
You can borrow it if you want. I have it. It's real good.
You don't say.
I do not say. That's for sure.
Nice. All right, Sam, number two.
Number two for me is going to be, and this is the one that I actually have to struggle with the most between Jarhead and this, but I'm going to stick with what I decided, Gladiator.
Ooh.
It is a really good movie.
I like that movie a lot.
It's an excellent movie.
I was thinking about putting that on my list.
Yeah, Gladiator is just awesome. Great themes,
mm-hmm.
great tale from hero to slave to victor.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many monumental epic scenes in it. What's his name? Okay, you're going to have to help me out. The guy who plays the
Joaquin
Emperor.
Phoenix?
He just kills it. He's so creepy.
Oh, yeah.
I was just telling him about busy little bees.
I want a child of pure blood.
Well, you stay with me, sister. Embrace me as a brother.
And then he goes on to play Johnny Cash. It's great.
He is a great actor.
Yeah.
I don't care.
I mean, he's a wacko, but what are you going to do?
Have you seen that? This is completely unrelated again. Have you seen The Master?
Yeah, yeah.
He's really, really good movie. In that
movie.
That is a great
movie. Paul Wes Anderson movie?
P.T. Anderson, so Paul or Thomas Anderson.
Paul Thomas. I always get the mix. Yeah. I always want to say Paul Wes Anderson. I don't know why.
Basically about Scientology.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's got the one guy who died who was a really good actor.
Yeah, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah. That guy's
he kills it in that movie.
That guy, love.
He sells it like no other.
Anytime I'm watching a movie and that guy walks in, it's like,
you know, it's going to be
my enjoyment of that movie doubles. I love that guy.
I saw The Master because he died and I wanted to
really
see something.
Okay.
I mean, I was interested in it before that, but I hadn't had time to see it.
It's a really good movie.
Yeah. No, it's great.
It's like
Walk to the Window.
Like all the shots right at the beginning when he's on like the boat and he's just finished drinking like paint thinner or whatever.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's just so good. Anyway, that's completely unrelated. Gladiator's very good though too.
I don't think there's any way I can connect those two.
I love talking about, like, because obviously movies are whatever was in the script and how it was directed and shots and stuff. But then you have the actors.
Very good. That is a movie.
No. So I'm saying, so you have these worlds that are completely different from each other, like The Master and Gladiator.
Yeah.
But there's the not real world part, which is the actors, and you're drawing lines with actors, but you end up jumping between these two ridiculously different things.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's an interesting
movies more than video games are harder to stay focused on.
Yeah.
Because anytime you bring one up, you're immediately going to get launched into like 1,000 thoughts of what that makes.
Well, because there's hardly any games you know who directed it.
Yeah.
Or we don't talk about voice actors or anything.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing really linking them together except the themes. And then it doesn't seem like as big of a jump.
But all I'll say about Gladiators, if you feel the sun on your face, you're already dead. Such a great. You couldn't feel better if you were about to. Because that makes you appreciate just how brutal the war was back then. You have hot tar being dumped on people and things.
Yeah.
And, you know, you wonder how they could motivate anybody to run into that mess. And then he gets up and he gives this great speech about how you just have to keep running and watch out for your brothers. And when you do die, don't worry. It's going to be great. And you're like, that would work.
Just trick him.
I would go against some barbarians with that guy.
Yeah, that opened so well, that movie.
Yeah.
That battle scene at the beginning is great.
Who directed that movie?
That's a Ridley Scott movie.
Yep. Is it actually?
Yeah. It is.
That's a really good movie. All right. So is it my number one now?
Yeah, number one.
My number one, and we've talked about it not for a while, but a decent amount, is Interstellar.
Really?
I love that movie. I love Matthew McConaughey.
All right, all right, all right.
Also, I rewatched True Detective season one again.
I still
really, really good. I like it. I think it showed space in a way that I've never seen in a movie before.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know Christopher Nolan, he's so big with those big grand shots. But when you're in space and it's like all of Jupiter and you have this little tiny pixel of a ship, there's just stuff like that I really liked. I liked the time stuff. That one scene on the water planet.
That's all I was going to talk about.
It's one of the best scenes I've ever seen in a movie ever.
Yep.
Or have you seen it?
No, but I've had it spoiled for me many times.
It's where they land, and it's like the prestige thing where if you look knowing that it's water, it's so obviously water. And you can see it moving.
Yep.
But when they just cut to it and go, oh, it's over by those mountains. Yep. They look like mountains. And then that is such a great movie. That one scene where they get off of the water planet, and for them it's been like an hour, but for Earth it's been like 12 years or something.
They do such a good job of always setting that up. They always tell you the stakes of every decision they're going to make.
Yep. Well, and I like the idea that like time was like a resource, where in the same way that they wouldn't do something because of how much fuel it cost, they would do it not because of how much time it would take them, but because of how much time it would be relative to everyone else on the planet they were trying to save.
Yeah.
So something for them might take a week, but it would be like 800 years or something. Like, you just can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
That scene at the end, or not at the end, when they get off the water planet where McConaughey's watching his kids grow up in like these video blogs that they're sending him over the course of like half an hour, he watches 12 years go by.
Yeah.
That was really depressing.
That's what I'm gonna say. They set up stakes and then they always make you pay for them.
Yeah.
When they do decide to go down to the water planet, you have to watch that and you see the consequences of what they decided.
And they knew it was a risk.
Yep.
And what was it supposed to take? Like 2 years or something? Mm-hmm. It's gonna be a long time, but it wasn't gonna be the end of the world.
Yep.
They left one guy behind. Oh my, they left the black guy behind, up orbiting the planet, where his time is basically the same as Earth time.
Mm-hmm.
And he thinks they're going to be gone for like 2 years, and they have this problem that they're working on. So he's working on fixing it. And then they come back, and it's been like 12 years. And this guy hasn't seen another human being in 12 years.
Ooh.
And they get off the ship, and he goes in to like shake Matthew McConaughey's hand, or he's going to like give him like, you know, like the bro hug or something.
Yeah.
And McConaughey just like, obviously shit went wrong. And for him, it's been like 90 minutes. So he's just like really frustrated.
Yeah.
But the other guy was like, he's so obviously starved for any sort of interaction or just like physical interaction with another human being. And it wasn't like, he didn't say it or anything. It's just the body language that was really depressing.
That movie is pretty depressing.
Yeah. Oh, and then what? And the other thing, like, they have like these cryo sleep tanks, but you still age in them.
Yeah.
It's just a way to go unconscious and pass the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy's saying something like, it just felt like a waste just sleeping the whole time. Because it was 12 years.
Yeah.
And so you have the option of sleeping, literally sleeping your life away, like closing your eyes and opening them, and like 10 years have passed. Or you can sit around and do nothing for no one, and there's no one around. It's just you by yourself.
Yeah, which is worse, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that deals with a lot of really big themes like that. What's the point? Time.
Yep.
It would never make it
Matt
into a
Damon
favorite list
came along and messed everything up.
The cinematography is really good.
Ooh, yeah, it's really, really good.
The cinematography when they're going through the black hole and everything is incredible. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to like about that movie. It would have never made it on any of my lists, but I appreciate that it exists. I'm glad you mentioned it.
Yeah. I really, really like that movie.
It's a good one.
I've seen it, I think, 3 times, and every time I notice something I didn't see before. Like something to appreciate, like, and not just like, oh, that was a really cool shot that I never paid attention to. Like some sort of theme or character interaction or something. It's a really good movie. There's a lot there.
They put a lot of work into the end time Earth.
Yeah.
A lot of fun details, like corn is the only crop that can functionally grow anymore.
Yeah, but the idea is there's some blight killing all the crops.
Okay.
And the only one that they can still grow is corn. And so they're exploring other planets. Some sort of like, we need to get off Earth.
The world's becoming a Dust Bowl.
Sure.
Yep.
And what's the name of the dad? He's a famous actor. He's a great character actor. He played the Trinity
John
killer
Lithgow.
On Dexter. John Lithgow.
Yep.
He is us. he is our generation, and they don't ever tell you that flat out, but he says little clues like, oh, when I was growing up, there was always a new gadget every week that we didn't need.
Yep.
And things like that. It makes you really reflect on it, just how good we have it now and how quick it could go to hell.
Yep.
Yeah.
I have to say, and I didn't notice this until like the last time I watched the movie, like the third time, he really didn't care at all about his son.
No.
It was all about his daughter.
Yeah.
And their relationship. And his son is like there. He starts a family. He has a couple kids. He's there holding in for dad. You know, dad's going to come back. Dad's saving the planet. Dad never comes back. And no one ever cares about him. And the, I don't know if that's supposed to be something I'm supposed to read into or if the script just forgot he existed.
I don't think it's too purposeful for that.
You think so?
There's some kind of statement about how your intelligence matters or how what you end up doing for the planet matters.
Okay. And he was just a corn farmer.
It might even be a message about the futility of sticking to the... Because there's a lot done with his character, and I haven't seen the movie since it came out.
Mm-hmm.
So if this is super ignorant, everything I'm saying, I apologize. I'm remembering a couple of years back.
Yep.
But I know that there's a scene where Matthew McConaughey has to go to their school, and they're talking about the futures of both of them. And she's really smart, but they don't know what to do with that.
Yep.
Because only like 100 people get to go to college in the future.
And they don't. And realistically, they don't need smart people.
Yeah.
They need people who can keep the human race alive.
And so he's valuable because the son is valuable because he'll farm.
Yep.
So if I had to guess, he's probably some kind of symbol for how we'll keep doing the wrong thing because it sustains us just a little bit longer.
To the point where... they say in the movie that they teach that the moon landings were faked.
Yeah, they do.
Because
discourage people.
They want to quell human ambition. They want to keep people where they are now to just war of attrition, basically. Keep the humans alive as long as you can.
Yeah.
Because any sort of advance in technology and any second of time or dollar of money you spend not growing corn is something that's just bad for the human race.
So he's that's probably some kind of stand-in symbol for the way we misvalue the wrong things.
Okay.
So he is a stand-in for we're going to keep digging away, and because of that, his character is pretty much completely useless.
Yep.
Yeah. That's my guess based on a 2-year-old memory of a movie that I know that I kind of liked. Tom's number one.
All right. So this is going to be kind of a weird number one, and I don't even know if either of you have seen it.
Go for it.
It has Clint Eastwood.
All right.
It has Donald Sutherland.
Oh, boy.
Does anybody know what it is? Any guesses? All right. It's called Kelly's Heroes.
Oh, I've heard of that movie.
Yeah. It's basically, it mashes so many things together. It's a comedy movie.
Yep.
It's in World War II.
Is this the Bad Company one?
Yeah, effectively. Yeah. Actually, Bad Company lifted one-to-one the story from Kelly's Heroes. Okay. It's almost exactly the same.
Yep.
It's,
I can't picture Clint Eastwood in a World War II movie.
I can't picture Clint Eastwood in a comedy.
See, he's kind of a straight man the whole time.
Sure. You don't say.
The funny thing. Yeah, no kidding.
He didn't have that comedic timing down.
Knock, knock. No, but it's also like a heist movie. There's so much to it. It's just super funny. I enjoy it every time I watch it. It was made in the 60s or 70s. Might have been the 70s. So it has like this upbeat like 70s soundtrack, which is super weird.
Like Soul Train, like
it has like if I had the song, I'd play a portion of it right now. But it's like completely you would never think in a million years of that song playing juxtaposed to a World War II movie. Like it's just mashing so many things together. And I love it for that. I think it's just a fantastic movie just because of that.
Explain the plot.
So basically,
I play Bad Company, so I think I know it. But
basically, this soldier finds out via some intel that he gets that there's a giant reserve of gold in a bank far behind enemy lines that the Nazis are, you know, obviously Nazi occupied territory. And he goes around and he recruits greedy bastards, like saying, hey, we can go behind enemy lines and we'll split it, but I need help to do this. So he gets like this whole cast of like people that are in it, obviously, to just get this giant amount of gold.
Mm-hmm.
So and unknowingly, they're actually winning the war by pushing through the lines and doing this. So that's one of the funny things about it.
That's pretty awesome.
And then they get to the town, and there's like three Tiger tanks, huge German, you know, tanks that like And for their small crew, it's like, how are we going to deal with this? And
I just want you to know real quick that my tired brain, when you said tiger tanks, imagined like a aquarium style with tigers. I need to go to bed.
I was like, you at work before this? Or
no, I worked nights on Monday, and I worked nights again on Thursday, so I've just been staying up all night.
Yeah, okay.
That'll do it. We're switching back to days.
Yeah, I'll do it.
And then today they did construction down in our basement because it flooded with the rain yesterday, so there were buzz saws and stuff, so I slept maybe 2 hours.
Jeez. Come on, man.
So, oh, man.
But I just want you to know that in my head I was – and what's really bad is that my brain was just okay with it. Like, yeah, oh, that happened in World War II.
Absolutely, absolutely.
They put tigers in big bowls. So anyway, go on. I'm sorry.
So I'll just spoil it. Like, they get there. And they're battling these Nazis, and they basically arrive at a stalemate, and like they get surrounded by these tanks. And then Clint Eastwood's basically just like, you know, there's a ton of gold in there, right? And he strikes a deal with the Nazis, and they all split the gold at the end of the movie. It's great.
Oh, that's actually hilarious.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, good. Check it out. It's phenomenal. Anyway, so that's all I got to say about Kelly's Heroes.
I've heard about it a lot, never seen it. Whenever I think of Clint Eastwood, I think of this movie, and I couldn't even tell you what it's called, about the Marines, and it was made in the 60s, 70s.
Oh,
Patton.
Heartbreak Ridge. No, Heartbreak Ridge. It's about they're preparing for Granada, right?
Yeah.
He's a drill sergeant?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's Heartbreak Ridge or something like that. Something like that.
Full Metal Jacket.
They showed it to us yeah. in the Army, and the whole reason why is because, you know, there's that black guy that wants to be a rock star through the whole movie. Mm-hmm. And they go and they have their fun little war in Granada,
yeah.
which is a whole day long.
Yeah, yeah.
And they shoot people, but, you know, this is a recruiting movie, so, like, there's no guilt or,
right.
or emotional toll to it. They just go back home. And
bunch of square-jawed American corn farm heroes.
Yeah, and conveniently, you know, Clint Eastwood, they get back and he's talking to the black kid. And I hope nobody's offended, but that's his character, is that he's a black kid who wants to be a rock star. I'm never going to remember his name.
Was this made as a recruitment movie?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And
do you think the Army, like, low-key funds certain movies?
Oh, yeah. I think that's been proven. I don't even think that's a secret.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
Yeah. There's huge recruitment boosts after things like Black Hawk Down.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, they'll lend their equipment, and I'm sure there's an agreement like, you have to show us in this light if you want to use our stuff.
Like, I wonder what Top Gun did for the Air Force.
Freaking Michael huge. Bay, every time he puts
that
in
was
like
a huge one. That was another one in this light that was made out of.
That was literally the Air Force masturbating.
It's actually the Navy.
Oh, whatever.
Got him.
Airplanes. Doesn't matter.
And the Navy SEALs have seen huge. Lone Survivor. And those movies that came out, the Navy seen huge recruitment bonuses from that. But at the very end of the movie, Clint Eastwood is getting off the plane because in this magical world, as soon as you get home from Granada, you get out of the military. And he's talking to the black kid, and he's like, oh, you're going to go be a rock star now? And the black kid goes, and keep in mind, they just got off the plane. Nah, sir, I just re-enlisted for another 10 years.
Oh, my.
And you're like, all right.
I wish every day could be like Granada.
Oh, yeah. So he learns that a life in the Corps is better than being
a rock
star.
Are there really 10-year contracts?
No. And I don't know that that's exactly what he says, but he re-enlists.
Here's the thing. If you went to, like, I don't know, is there a re-enlistment office or something?
Yeah.
If you just went there and said, I want to give 10 years to the Army.
They would figure it out.
Yeah, that's what I was really? Going to say. Like, I'm sure if you asked, they would gladly help you with that.
So what was the name? You've talked about this before. It's basically like, you know, you call charter. You want to cancel your internet. They transfer you to retention.
Yeah.
What's the Army retention?
It's called retention. It's
a
retention
actually?
NCO.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
And he has...
Do they try to, like, do you get a... Is it like charter, where if I call to cancel, I'll get a better deal if I stay on? Is it the Army version of, like, we'll give you this to stay?
Yeah. It depends on the bonus that's... the budget that's available for the military. They'll offer you a certain amount of money to stay in. And usually it's pretty significant. It's in the tens of thousands of dollars. Hmm. I was so ready to get out of the regular Army. and I knew the retention... Because if you have one embedded in your unit, you know them.
Okay.
And he knew me, and he knew not to try. When I got out of the Guard, they tried everything. They sat down, they talked to me about healthcare benefits. They're like, we see you smoking. How long you really think you're going to go before you have some kind of medical problem?
Oh, what the heck, guy?
Oh, yeah, it was real. And I'd never met the guy before. And fortunately, I hated the Guard, too. And I was so short with him. And it's always – and they do it on purpose. They're always like a few ranks ahead of you so okay. that you're naturally ingrained
to kind of
like –
intimidation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And and by the end of that, he was like, okay, I've talked to a lot of people, and usually they're on the wall about on the border whether they want to stay in or not, and I can tell that you just want to get out, so let's just get the paperwork signed. Because I think I said something when he was like, how long before you have a medical problem? I think I looked at him, I was like, well, then I guess I'll just die.
Okay, that's pretty good.
But anyway, my number one movie.
Go for it.
Is Starship Troopers.
Ooh, that's a good
That's
one.
A really good
And that's one that's not movie. Hard for me to commit to at all. This
Really?
Movie, yeah, because here's the deal. This movie has such a significant history in my life. It came out when I was a youngin. I want to say like 9 or 8. I should have looked it up so I knew the exact age. But I was at that age. I wasn't allowed to watch it.
Yep.
But it looked like the coolest thing that had ever existed.
Yep.
And all of my friends got to see it. And this isn't supposed to be like, oh, poor me. I didn't get to watch this R-rated movie because I didn't need to see it.
But it solidified its status.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what I would do is I would just hound my friends that were allowed to watch it to just tell me about it. I was a really nerdy, weird socially. I was homeschooled and I acted like it. So I would go over to my friend's house and I'd be like, tell me about Starship Troopers from beginning to end.
Can
I want to
read
know
the script
everything.
To me?
Yep. Yeah, basically. And so this movie was in mythic status before I even got to see it.
Yep.
I got to see it on my 16th birthday. I finally found a way to see it. And it did not disappoint.
Yep.
It is awesome. From beginning to end. And what I really love about it is, you know, when the first time I saw it, I just saw it straightforward. I took every word for exactly what they were saying.
Yep.
And so I was like, oh, it's great. They did. They killed the bugs. They took the planet. They're staying in the military. It's awesome. Which makes me wonder on a subliminal level how much that was responsible for me enlisting.
You think so?
Because, well, first of all, I grew up on an Air Force base, so there was a lot of to serve is the best thing you could do.
Yep.
But then you watch the number one hyped movie of your life, and it's all about, as a
how
joke.
How great the military is.
As a complete joke. And that's the great punchline of my life, is that this total farce. What's the word? When
charade?
No, when it's like making a joke of it.
Parody?
Satire?
Satire is the word I was looking for. The satirical look on military service might have in some way played a part in the makeup of my brain to think to
that you
take
should
it seriously,
actually join the military.
That, it is great. But what's great about it is you come back and you see it later and you realize that it's like this giant satire of a fascist regime.
Did you – so when you realized that was what the movie was about, had you already joined the military? Did you feel like bamboozled?
No, I think I figured it out probably when I was about 18, right before I went in. Okay. Somewhere around there. You know, it's like trying to figure out when you became self-aware.
Yeah.
You know,
like your first actual memory.
Yeah, like the first time you actually knew that you were a human being and like a system of human beings and that you had your own independent thoughts and ideas. I don't remember when I started looking deeper into things on the surface. But I do know watching it now, you know, it's so great. They allude to the fact that we invaded the bugs first. That they're just defending themselves.
Yeah.
And at the very end, you know, it takes a whole different context when they're looking at the bug brain. And they're like, it's afraid. And everybody's cheering. And when you see that taking it just at surface value, you're like, yeah, that bug's afraid.
Yeah.
And when you look at it from the satirical, it's like we just like invaded this colony and
killed
the leader.
Them all. Yeah.
And the poor thing is just terrified. And then they're going to do it with that blender gun.
I
love Starship Troopers.
Yeah, like, it's a great movie. I love that movie.
Zagama Beach.
I'm surprised.
I'm from Buenos Aires and I say kill them all. Yeah,
I'm surprised I didn't think of that up for my list, actually.
Starship Troopers?
Yeah, it never came to mind.
Did you really enjoy that movie? Like,
I might have put it number 3. I don't know. I think Dredd's too good of a 3. I can't replace that one.
The thing that surprised me about Starship Troopers is the special effects still hold up.
Yeah,
totally.
Like, they're
110%.
Really good.
Yeah.
Like, they did a fantastic job with that. Not the sequels, though.
No, the sequels.
I never saw the sequels.
The third one is the best of the sequels.
Okay.
And it's
funny.
Is
it passable as a movie?
Yeah. No, it's worth watching. The second one you can completely forget exists. The third one, Joe Rico returns, and they go even farther. They add, like, a religious spin. But it was at the time when the Army was releasing those commercials with the really successful song, you know, dun dun
da 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 da. Oh, yep, 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 yep. I bet whoever wrote that song made a fortune.
Oh yeah.
Oh dude, yeah, he's set for life. Or he's in the military.
Almost everybody that I graduated basic training with had that as their ringtone.
Oh yeah.
And that was back before cell phones were really good, so it was like beep 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 beep.
It's like a MIDI version.
That's hilarious, actually.
It got us hard, man. But there's in the third one, there's a song, A Good Day to Die, which is like the chaplain, the religious leader of the service, always gets up and sings it. Yeah. It's a good day to die. You don't need to know the reasons why.
That's pretty.
Yeah, Starship Troopers is probably my most secure standing on this entire list. Like we said last week, if you asked me my name my number two and three, those would probably change from day to day. But Starship Troopers is pretty much my number one favorite movie of all time.
The same guy who directed RoboCop.
Yeah. You didn't know that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, once you know that, it makes a lot of sense. Watch RoboCop again.
Yeah.
And
I mean, it's RoboCop is about like the police state.
Yeah.
Like
that's very interesting. That kind of recontextualizes a lot of stuff, I guess. All right. Well, it's getting about that time.
Yeah, that's about
so
it.
So what did we learn today?
Ooh, what did we learn today?
I learned, thanks to Corey, that movies have a script.
Get out.
And a director.
Come on, man.
And no actors.
No way.
You know what I was trying to say?
That analysis really dropped a knowledge bomb on me.
I mean, why talk about the police state or the militarization of government or fascism or any of that stuff when we can break a movie down into its components like that?
People say words in front of a camera?
People pretend to be other people?
No
way. All right, Corey, what did you learn today?
What did I learn today? I learned that anytime Matt Damon shows up in a movie, he's going to ruin everything. It's going to be really bad.
Yeah.
Matt Damon, fun fact, is a person who stands in front of cameras.
Does he pretend to be people or is he just be himself?
He wears things that other people tell him to wear.
Really?
And he stands where people tell him to stand and he says what people tell him to say.
Okay.
And he's one of the best at
it. Well, what, is there a word for that or is that just Matt Damon?
Impersonator?
Reedy Righty. Reedy Righty.
That's good.
Reedy Righty.
A professional Reedy Rightier.
Yep. Oh, of course, of course.
Yeah.
I think I learned... just remembering Kelly's Heroes, that it's okay to strike deal with Nazis if you're going to get a bunch of gold for it.
That sounds like such a great ending to a movie, actually.
Yeah. The last order of business is you guys have to decide my punishment. I only said it once, I believe.
It might have happened more. I wasn't really paying attention.
Yeah. I was trying to police myself up.
You have to tattoo one?
It has to be real. It has to be like a real thing.
All right.
You owe me $100.
Well, fair's fair.
Well, I guess.
Here you go. I always carry $100 just in case I lose a bet.
Thank goodness you didn't say it more. Maybe we can decide that for next week.
Yeah.
I'm having a hard time thinking of
I could
spot.
Do a punishment on, I was going to say on film, but on mic.
On film?
Yeah. On mic. On tape.
You guys can think of something.
On Betamax.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Feel free to stop by our YouTube channel, Purple Chop. You can search it in YouTube, obviously. You can stop by the site. What's that?
Can I search it in Yahoo?
It might work.
How about Bing?
Bing just is cancer. Don't use that. It's just bad.
But Yahoo's are?
Yahoo's slightly better than Bing.
I like using Bing on my Internet Explorer. So I do my internet searching.
Yep.
Check out the site, purplechop.com. Twitter, Purple Chop Crew.
Yep.
Get notifications.
Oh,
forget when things
yep.
happen. We'll have more. Okay, we should do a loser league sometime soon.
I gotta pick. It's my turn. Still, pick a game. I think.
Oh, okay. When you do,
I got a list of games. We'll figure some out.
Don't Sounds worry. Good. All right. So this we didn't even introduce ourselves. Well, this has been Tom,
Sam.
Well, we can just do the introduction.
Yeah.
As if we're introing it.
And you could move it around.
This is Tom.
This is Sam, Big Irish.
This is Corey, Slavic Donut, Jamnik.
I should say.
Well, you're going to throw out your last name.
Yeah.
Getting it identity, off there. You're just the middle finger to identity thefts.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for listening.